Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, except for the very human part, introducing the Silver Star War hero Tommy Riemann or the New York subway hero Wesley Autry. It was hard to say if the president's heart was in the State of the Union speech last night. Domestic initiatives the White House had telegraphed as bold on energy and health care and immigration were modestly described. Iraq, the war that will be this president's legacy, was almost wistfully referenced. Not the fight we entered, said the president, but the fight we're in. But beleaguered or determined or both, this is the president for two more years, with a Democratic Congress and a plateful of trouble. Up next on Point, top analysts and politicians from both sides of the aisle on the State of the Union and the state of the presidency. Joining me first today from the road as he travels with President Bush, who is out already pushing his new proposals, is Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Richard Wolff, thanks for joining us. Where are you? What's the president up to today?
Well, I'm actually standing in a greenhouse in Wilmington, Delaware, where the president is promoting his alternative energy proposals from last night. There's a lot of talk about cellulosic fuels, which I hope you're not going to ask me to define.
We will hear from a lot of people who listen to the speech. What is the White House saying about how they feel about the president's address?
Well, of course, the White House feels it was a tremendous success, but these were very difficult times, and not just because of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats there. Obviously, Iraq overshadowed everything, and you could hear it in the president's tone when he talked about giving the war a chance. Not quite John Lennon, but it says just how tentative and unconfident the administration has become with their political base splitting away from them on the war.
The Washington Post headline today is Beleaguered President. The White House telegraphed that there would be bold proposals on the domestic side here on energy, immigration, health care, and the rest. Are these being seen as bold, as game-changing proposals, Richard?
Not game-changing at this stage, no. But the energy proposals are ambitious, for sure. And there are real question marks as to whether there is the capacity to deliver as much ethanol as the president is hoping that the country will be consuming in the next 10 years. And, of course, they're trying to signal that the president is open to new ideas, a president, of course, who has been tagged as being anti-environmentalist all these years. But really, the White House knows that all that matters is Iraq, and it doesn't much matter what the president, although he's spoken in quite apocalyptic terms about the possibility of war in the region, a broader regional war. But really, all that matters is not so much what he says, but what happens on the ground in Iraq. He has to show results very quickly.
And last night on display there, he has two more years. Did we see, by definition, a lame duck facing a Democratic majority? Or do we have a president that, with the power of the presidency, can still push an agenda effectively, Richard?
Well, lame duck are two words the White House absolutely loathes right now, but they had long said, in fact, at the start of the second term, that they figured lame duck status would really begin at about 18 months period, and in fact, it really began before then. There's a very limited amount that he can achieve. He's trying to choose things like immigration, where, frankly, he's more in line with Democrats than his own party. But again, Iraq overshadows everything, especially his ability to work with Democrats.
Richard Wolff traveling today with the president as he follows up on the agenda laid out last night. Richard Wolff, chief correspondent there for Newsweek, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining me now from Dallas is Bill McKenzie, editorial columnist for the Dallas Morning News and a longtime Bush watcher. Bill McKenzie, welcome to On Point. Great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Look forward to it.
So do we. And from Washington, we're joined by Ryan Lizza, senior editor at the New Republic, correspondent for GQ magazine. He spent much of yesterday with Senator Jim Webb of Virginia, who gave the Democratic response to President Bush's State of the Union speech. Ryan Lizza, great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Happy to be here.
So first to you, Bill McKenzie, your newspaper today on the editorial page saying President Bush's speech last night seemed less about the State of the Union and more about the state of his presidency. What's the paper mean?
Well, I would make this argument. I think what it was last night was the rebound of compassionate conservatism. Look at these issues they're in there domestically. Energy, health care, no child left behind, immigration, more money for HIV, AIDS, and malaria. Do something about entitlements and spending reforms, earmarks, add more people to the military. This is a center-right agenda. The intro to the show was talking about whether it's modest or perhaps mm-hmm. even tepid. And, sure, some of these have been around, but I don't think it is necessarily modest or tepid. I think the president is extending the right hand of fellowship to the Democrats, and now let's see what happens. Clearly, his poll numbers are bad. No question about that. Clearly, he is up against it. Clearly, he's going to have to negotiate with the Democrats. But I'm of the mind that if you look at some of these issues like no child, immigration, energy, there's enough commonality in there that both these parties, if they wanted to, could come up with something over the next 12 to 15 months.
Ryan, Lizza, the latest Wall Street Journal, what was NBC poll, finds only 2 in 10 Americans want this president setting national policy. And the Democrats have a majority there in Congress. So if this is an extended hand from the president, if it is, do you see the Democrats eager to take it? We've got important issues here, pressing issues.
In short, no. And I would actually argue it's not so much a center-right agenda, but on immigration, healthcare, education, and energy, it's arguably a center-left agenda that Bush proposed last night. The problem is that these are all issues, as poll after poll has pointed out, that the public trusts the Democrats to take care of and not President Bush. Even when President Bush was at the height of his popularity, these weren't issues he scored well on. So he's proposed a series of half measures where the Democrats have much, much bolder plans, particularly on health care and education and energy. And for most Democrats on those issues, the response will be, well, that's very nice, Mr. President, but we have a couple of ideas about that ourselves. And you're welcome to sign these into law once we pass them or veto them. But his health care plan is being mocked by Democrats already. His energy plan is extremely modest compared to what a lot of Democrats want to do. The one area where there's real potential for compromise is on immigration. And what will be interesting if Bush really pursues that, and he's stuck to his guns on that issue, is that most conservative Republicans who are the sort of last bulwark of support for the president will be quite angry because they really dislike his immigration plan a lot.
There are a lot of Bill.
Right. I would argue that we shouldn't write off education as just a Democratic issue. No Child Left Behind was a bipartisan thing. And if you look at what is who's interested in now, it is Bush, it is Ted Kennedy, it's George Miller, Democrat from California. And those three have had they each have a stake in this game. And I think you're going to see the White House come up with some new money for No Child Left Behind in its budget proposal. I think you're likely to see that. It won't be enough to satisfy Ted Kennedy, but it will be enough to get the conversation going. And there'll be some exchange between new money and perhaps a new willingness to do something at the middle school level or extend testing into 9th or 10th grade. So I think this is something you're going to see more bipartisanship on.
We'll go into some of these particular issues in more depth, but the president was speaking in broad strokes very quickly out of the gate last night. I wanted to get your response from both of you. Let's listen as the president discusses the federal deficit in the address.
We set a goal of cutting the deficit in half by 2009 and met that goal 3 years ahead of schedule. Now let us take the next step. In the coming weeks, I will submit a budget that eliminates the federal deficit within the next 5 years. I ask you to make the same commitment. Together, we can restrain the spending appetite of the federal government, and we can balance the federal budget.
Ryan, Lizza, a lot of talk about big deficits in the Bush years. When the president says, I will submit a budget that eliminates the federal deficit within the next 5 years, does anyone in that chamber believe it?
There might be some support. I noticed that there was a rousing standing ovation on the part of Democrats for that line. There are a lot of Democrats that are rethinking their sort of commitment to balancing the budget. You know, that was something that became popular among Democrats during the Clinton era, and there are some more liberal Democrats who are suddenly saying, "Hey, this president cuts taxes and spends money, cut taxes and spent money on all of his priorities when he had some political popularity. And now that we're in power and we want to do some things, he's turning around and saying, oh, now we have to take care of the deficit. So you Democrats will be boxed in. You won't be able to deal with your priorities." I think that you'll see some of the more liberal Democrats making that argument and sort of questioning the party's commitment to, to sort of Reaganomics and strict budget discipline. On the other hand, the leadership of the Democratic Party has been very clear that getting the deficit under control is a top priority. They've passed some rules in the House that make it easier to do that. So, you know, that may be something that the two parties really work together on. The problem for the president is the Democrats want to they want to let some of his tax cuts expire, and it would be shocking if George Bush allowed that to happen.
Ryan Lezza, Bill McKenzie, listen with me, if you would, to the sort of key paragraph here from the president on Iraq and the war.
This is not the fight we entered in Iraq, but it is the fight we are in. Every one of us wishes this war were over and won. Yet it would not be like us to leave our promises unkept, our friends abandoned, and our own security at risk. Ladies and gentlemen, on this day, at this hour, it is still within our power to shape the outcome of this battle. Let us find our resolve and turn events toward victory.
And turn events toward victory. Bill McKenzie, let me come first to you on this. Among Republicans, do you think the president helped himself last night? One by one, we've seen Republicans at the edges peeling away from the president on this, putting up proposals to oppose more troops for Iraq. Do you think can a speech make a difference?
Well, I'm not sure one speech can make a difference, but to your question, no. I don't think he probably persuaded enough Republicans to go with him because, you know, he'd laid out his strategy last week. We've seen what's happened since then. John Warner, others have stood out against it. So I don't anticipate him being able to persuade a lot more in his own party to go do it. But I still, you know, I have never heard a convincing answer from those who are in favor of starting to withdraw to the questions he has raised about, well, what will happen if we leave Iraq and al-Qaeda fills the vacuum? Or what would happen to Iraq if we have an alliance between Baghdad and Tehran and they have influence over some very valuable oil fields? Or what's going to happen if we step out and the Saudis step in to protect the Sunnis? You know, there just haven't been too many answers to those questions. And again, I want to admit he is in a pickle. I don't argue with that. But it is easy to just dismiss what he is saying as, oh, well, look, you know, that's Bush saying it. Well, what's the alternative?
Let's go to Democratic Senator Jim Webb, new senator from Virginia, a former soldier himself, has a son in the Marines in Iraq right now. He spoke to the president on the war.
The president took us into this war recklessly. He disregarded warnings from the National Security Advisor during the first Gulf War, the Chief of Staff of the Army, two former commanding generals of Central Command, whose jurisdiction includes Iraq, the Director of Operations on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and many, many others with great integrity and long experience in national security affairs. We are now, as a nation, held hostage to the predictable and predicted disarray that has followed.
A nation held hostage, says Democratic Senator Jim Webb, or he said in response to the president. Ryan Lizzie, you spent a lot of time with Jim Webb yesterday. What about Bill McKenzie's question? Senator Webb was very critical. He looked back to the origins of the war and the execution of the war. What about the way ahead from this speech?
Well, one thing I will say is these responses, these rebuttals, usually don't matter. And they're usually, the person who's picked for these things is usually very honored to do the rebuttals. But it's usually a really bad gig because following the president in a State of the Union is just you're destined to look small.
You don't have any of that theater of the assembled chamber and all the rest, right?
And I mean, think back over the last 10 years. I can barely remember one of these speeches. But I honestly think that this one was different. I thought this was one of the most powerful rebuttals that I'd ever seen after a State of the Union. Jim Webb wrote this speech largely himself. And right before that clip you just played, he basically made the point that we gave Bush our trust and he betrayed us. He said we owed them our loyalty as Americans and we gave it. But Bush took us recklessly into this war. The Democrats, if they had to invent a powerful messenger to deliver the anti-war argument, they would invent Jim Webb, right? This sort of populist Southerner who has his own son, a Marine, fighting in this war and whose ancestors have fought in most American wars. And it was, to me, the most powerful case against Bush that I'd seen.
With the Democratic majority sitting in front of him, it also took on more weight. Webb came in strong on economics also with a very populist message saying Teddy Roosevelt saw a division in the sort of sharing of the wealth of the nation, did something about it. And then, to Bill McKenzie's point, he talked about Dwight Eisenhower in the dark days of the Korean War. Let's listen to that from Senator Webb.
As I look at Iraq, I recall the words of former general and soon-to-be president Dwight Eisenhower during the dark days of the Korean War, which had fallen to a bloody stalemate. When comes the end, asked the general, who had commanded our forces in Europe during World War II. And as soon as he became president, he brought the Korean War to an end. These presidents took the right kind of action for the benefit of the American people and for the health of our relations around the world. Tonight, we're calling on this president to take similar action in both areas. If he does, we will join him. If he does not, we will be showing him the way.
Ryan Lizza, James Webb called for regional diplomacy as an answer to how to end this and move U.S. troops on. Do you see that gaining traction here, being seen as a realistic, safe enough way out of Iraq, or is Bill McKenzie still holding the question that the president holds, if not this, what?
Well, look, I mean, Webb is basically where the Iraq study group is. He's basically where the sort of foreign policy elite in this country are. You know, he says we don't want an immediate shift towards – he wants an immediate shift towards regional-based diplomacy, not a precipitous withdrawal. And that is the sort of answer to Bill's question of what happens in the wake of the U.S. sort of drawing down. It's not that we leave immediately. It's that we sort of hunker down. Our soldiers get off the streets. We set up bases in Iraq to strike at al-Qaeda. It's not just sort of leaving tomorrow. You know, the other answer to Bill's point is, unfortunately, a lot of people predict the sort of dire consequences that he laid out no matter what we do. So if the surge doesn't work, then we're left with this outcome. We're left with this sort of horrible outcome anyway. So what we should be doing in Iraq now, according to Webb and others, is managing that chaos as best we can and stepping up the regional diplomacy that the Bush administration has not seemed interested in doing at all.
And I think it's great. I'm all in favor of the regional diplomacy. Don't get me wrong. I think Bush has made a mistake by not doing that. I think that is part of the answer. But I think once we start phasing out troops right now or putting them, you know, getting them off the streets and all that, I think that pretty much signals that the game is over. And so it becomes a matter of waiting for anybody else who wants to step in and fill the vacuum, or they can start planning it. And I think there is a vast difference between North Korea and the Middle East. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope I am wrong. But I think this is one of the few times in our lives for the, you know, if you will, the domino theory could apply. I wish we hadn't gone at Iraq. I think we made a mistake in doing so. I think, though, we can make an equal mistake if in the way we handle this over the next couple of years. And that's a regional conference could perhaps be the exit strategy. But I don't think you start with a withdrawal.
Bill, Ryan, that one we're not going to solve today, but we give plenty of attention to it. There's a lot more on this table. I want to look at, Bill, several of these issues are kind of have deep roots in your neck of the woods in Texas on energy. First of all, the president said he wants to cut gasoline usage in the U.S. by 20% in the next 10 years. Let's listen to that.
Tonight, I ask Congress to join me in pursuing a great goal. Let us build on the work we've done and reduce gasoline usage in the United States by 20% in the next 10 years. When we do that, we will have cut our total imports by the equivalent of 3/4 of all the oil we now import from the Middle East.
You know, Bill McKenzie, Ryan, there was a sense I had last night that some of these things, which are very large, the president didn't seem so terribly engaged. They're almost like throwaway lines. Bill McKenzie, what do you make of this? I mean, it's easy to say and hard to do. Did you hear the stuff of that kind of cutback in American gas usage in the president's statement?
I don't think it's a throwaway line. I mean, look what he said last year about the our dependence on foreign oil, and now he's followed up with this. Our newspaper criticized him last year for not doing anything for fuel standards for cars. Well, now, okay, he has fuel standards for cars. He has an acceleration of our use of alternative energies. When I was listening to that, I thought, in a way, this is his answer to Tom Friedman of the New York Times, mm-hmm. who's been all over him to do more about energy independence. All right, so he steps up here and does it. And what now are the Democrats going to do? Bash him for doing it? You know, I think there's another reality we have to consider mm-hmm. is that John Dingell, the chairman of the powerful Energy and Commerce Committee, a Detroit area Democratic congressman. Well, John Dingell, last I checked, has not been Mr. Big on fuel standards. So to some degree, you know, Bush is caught with having to deal with Dingell on this. So are the Democrats, is Nancy Pelosi going to pull John Dingell back in and say, hey, look, we want serious fuel standards? Mm.
Let's ask a Democrat right now. Joining us from Washington is Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, Democratic Congresswoman representing Ohio's 9th District. She's serving her 12th term in the House. Congressman Kaptur, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And our district borders, Mr. Dingell.
So there you are, kissing cousins. You hear Bill McKenzie's question. He says, look, here's the president. He's finally stepping up. He says, with a very large goal, we're going to cut gasoline usage by a very significant portion. Well, are the Democrats going to applaud and get on board or criticize? What do you make of it?
America has to change. We have to move toward a new age of energy independence. The president has been talking about this for a number of years, but the facts are, since he became president, America is importing 1 billion more barrels of oil per year. So his rhetoric doesn't match reality. Many Democrats, including myself, are absolutely dedicated to this. And I must say, some Republicans, in fact, I thought the president should have recognized Senator Lugar of Indiana, who has been a leader for decades on biofuels. We understand this in the Midwest. We know this will be new jobs through new energy sources. And so this didn't start with the president. What I'm concerned about the president is the follow-through. Remember a couple years ago he talked about the Hydrogen Fuel Initiative?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to that? What happened to his commitment to new forms of energy in every single budget account that he talked about making a difference in past State of the Union addresses? He has cut funds, or he is not supported.
Congressman,
so the rhetoric is there.
May I ask you, on the biofuel side, a lot of that is ethanol. We could see a lot of enthusiasm in the hall last night. Of course, you know, early caucuses are in Iowa. Lots of people want those votes. You've got plenty of corn grown in your own neck of the woods, no doubt. Do you really see this as the answer, or is this politics talking when Congress gets all excited about ethanol?
All right, let's put it in a broader context. We have to move from the hydrocarbon age into the carbohydrate age. Right now, the reason ethanol is the fuel of choice on the alcohol side is because corn is so heavily subsidized. If we look at soybeans, for example, which is also subsidized, we see biodiesel coming from that particular type of crop. But those are not the highest producing BTUs per acre crops. We have to move into the science of carbohydrates and sustainability in production in a way we have never done before. We are at the beginning of that science, believe it or not. Our ancestors who built stills all over, they understood a little bit about this. But we are into a modern age now, and we have to break the carbohydrate molecule in a way that we haven't before.
Mm, mm.
So
I want to ask you.
Ethanol is the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's like going to the moon rather than Pluto.
We've got a lot on the table here. I want to ask you about the president's health care proposal as well. Let's listen to just a little, if we may, Congresswoman Kaptur, Ryan Lizza, Bill McKenzie. Here's President Bush laying out his vision.
And so tonight I propose 2 new initiatives to help more Americans afford their own insurance. First, I propose a standard tax deduction for health insurance that will be like the standard tax deduction for dependents. Families with health insurance will pay no income on payroll tax or payroll taxes on $15,000 of their income. Single Americans with health insurance will pay no income or payroll taxes on $7,500 of their income. With this reform, more than 100 million men, women, and children who are now covered by employer-provided insurance will benefit from lower tax bills.
The president last night on health care. Congresswoman Kaptur, Democrat of Ohio, are you prepared to step up and say yes to that? Is this the way to solve the health care problem?
Well, as a member of the Budget Committee, let me say, I asked myself as I was sitting there, okay, so what's the bottom line on this, and how does it deal with the affordability issue? What about people who work minimum wage jobs? Where does the rubber meet the road here in terms of affordability and access to care? I'm glad the president mentioned health insurance in his address, very much so. That's on the minds of so many people as rates rise and policies are canceled. So I'm concerned about access and affordability and then the impact on the budget. I don't have those numbers right now, but believe me, we're going to look at them. If the president wants to meet us halfway on health insurance, the American people want us to be there.
We've been keeping a lot of listeners waiting. Let's turn to Nashville and Montanez. Hi, Montanez. You're on the air.
All right. I have a huge problem with the president's propaganda concerning this temporary visa policy that we're about to implement. Yeah, it's going to be great for
the guest worker
America.
Program, his immigration reform, as he would put it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've went from one extreme as far as building a wall, using migrant workers to giving them temporary visas to help corporate America, thereby changing nothing.
So you're saying no thank you, and a lot of Republicans say the same. Congresswoman Kaptur, what about the president on immigration with the majority in Congress now? Is he going to ally with your party and push this through?
Oh, this is a tremendous issue for our continent. And one of the reasons we have so much immigration, as the gentleman says, is because there are those industries that benefit through workers with no protections. I believe that we need a continental labor standard, and we need to respect the dignity of workers, and we need to have negotiations with countries like Mexico in order that people's labor rights be protected. We don't have that right now. In addition to that, NAFTA was negotiated in a way that millions of peasants in Mexico have been dispossessed of their land. They are all running north.
Congressman Kaptur, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bill McKenzie, immigration is another issue that comes right down to your neck of the woods in Texas. Let's listen to the president for just a moment talking about the temporary worker program.
We should establish a legal and orderly path for foreign workers to enter our country to work on a temporary basis. As a result, they won't have to try to sneak in. And that will leave border agents free to chase down drug smugglers and criminals and terrorists.
Bill McKenzie, first to you, can the president thread the needle with the new Democratic majority on immigration?
I don't see why not. I mean, you look at the relationship that the president and Ted Kennedy have. They're two huge issues they're getting ready to work on, immigration and education. They both have a stake in it. And if you look at the three principles that these two favor, as well as others like John McCain, they want border security, they want a guest worker program, they want a pathway to citizenship. Those are three principles that they all agree upon. The question is, will there be enough people in the House who will want to go along with that? I think you can argue about some of the details, but I think you can get a bill in the Senate that contains those three principles. And so I say, why not be able to do it unless it's just going to get down to either the right wing of the Republican Party is going to try to stop it, or Democrats say, look, you know, we don't want to give Bush a victory. We'd rather wait till we take over the White House and get a victory. And I would say to that, well, that's what a shame.
Ryan Lizza, how do you see the politics on immigration now?
I basically agree with Bill on that. I mean, there is an opportunity to get this done. The one caveat is how will 2008 politics play into this? I mean, McCain is now with Bush on Bush's two most unpopular proposals. The war in Iraq, which is extremely unpopular, with independents that matter to McCain in New Hampshire, and he's with him on immigration, which is extremely unpopular with the base of the Republican Party. which he's had trouble wooing. So I wonder how much of an ally McCain will be. He's already sort of stuck his neck out on supporting the escalation policy in Iraq. And I wonder if he'll be a team player on this or not, or if he'll just want it to sort of go away. There'll be other senators like Brownback that are to McCain's right that will be eager to sort of point out this contrast. On the Democratic side, there are similar politics. You wonder what Obama and Hillary Clinton and some of these other Democrats, how they're going to play the immigration issue, because it's not obvious that it's to their political advantage to get that bill passed.
Let's ask a Republican colleague, if I may, of McCain and Brownback and Obama and Clinton. We're joined right now from Washington by Senator John Sununu, Republican senator from New Hampshire. He just spoke this morning at the Foreign Relations Committee, in front of the Foreign Relations Committee on Iraq. Senator Sununu, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
A lot to look at, but let's go first to this issue we've got in front of us, immigration, and how it's likely to play out now that you've got a Democratic majority and a president pushing for reforms the Democrats have made positive noises about in the past. Do you see this getting through or getting tangled up in 08 presidential politics?
Well, I guess we're starting with the easy questions. look, it's very difficult to see. I just heard the last couple minutes of commentary, and I think those are very fair points. More likely than not, we're going to get it done now, because the Democrats have Republicans, Senator McCain or others, that they've already worked with, already developed this issue, already developed pieces of legislation, and that takes time. Even if you had a Democrat president that might agree a little bit more with, say, a Harry Reid on the issue, you've got to start from scratch. So if there's an opportunity, it's now, because so much legwork has already been done, because you have a president that's willing to work, and he is a lame duck. We can't escape that fact. I think there'll be pushback from Republicans and conservative Democrats on some of the issues of citizenship and amnesty. I imagine, though, that those can be resolved.
Will this split the Republican Party on the way to the 2008 elections? Will it just crack it down the middle?
No, it won't crack down the middle. It is an issue where there's not broad agreement among Republicans, and there's even some Democrat, some disagreement, less pronounced, but some disagreement among Democrats on the issue. But I actually don't think it'll play directly into the presidential politics, because among at least the three leaders, Giuliani, Romney, and McCain, at the end of the day, there's probably not a great deal of difference on the immigration policies.
What about Republican solidarity on the war in Iraq, Senator Sununu? You're just testifying this morning. You heard the president last night saying whatever we signed up for, we didn't sign up for failure. Some say that's already in hand. Republicans getting nudgy on the president's initiative there. How do you see the GOP on Capitol Hill hanging together or dividing over Iraq in the months ahead?
Well, I think there are a lot of questions about our progress in Iraq and about the president's policy. My fundamental questions are whether or not we should make any commitment to increase troop level before the Iraqis have delivered on promises, and I don't think we should. The Iraqis taking steps within their own government on a new oil law, a reconciliation process, local elections, and other issues are crucial to stability. It doesn't matter what we achieve in the next 2 months on security. If they don't accomplish those goals, you won't have anything that can be sustained in the long term. Now, I think the president and the administration understand this, I think we need to hold the Maliki government's feet to the fire to a much greater extent. The second big concern is whether or not U.S. troops are right to take the lead in dealing with sectarian violence, and I think that's a mistake. Only the Iraqi security forces, those that have been trained to a higher level, can deal effectively with sectarian violence. And there has to be a political will as well.
But isn't the president ordering U.S. troops right into the jaws of that, putting more troops in Baghdad? That's all about sectarian violence.
Well, and I think that's arguably the most controversial part of the plan, and the part where he loses Republicans, and where even someone like me, that fully recognizes the country's better off without Saddam there, disagrees with him.
Fascinating.
Look, the bottom line is we've got probably a 3 or 4 month window where the president and the commanders on the ground, General Petraeus, who testified yesterday, is headed to Iraq shortly. You know, they have a limited window to demonstrate real progress on the security front. And as I said, look, maybe more important, the Iraqi government has to demonstrate delivery.
Plenty of misgivings and caveats there. Senator Sununu, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. May I turn to a call?
Yes, sure.
If you've got 1 second.
I have to get back to the committee meeting, but I'll be happy to take another two
Let's
or three
just,
minutes.
Great. From Madison, Wisconsin, Robert's on the line. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. My problem is that this terrible thing that's going to happen if we withdraw our military in a orderly way is really remarkable. If these people don't want to solve their problems and not have the United States to blame for their terrible situation, one holy man insisting to kill the other holy man's people. My goodness, what are we going to do about that particular situation?
Robert, the U.S. started the war with the invasion. Do we have to end it? Do the Democrats have a better plan than the president?
I believe the Democrats do have a better plan. The better plan is basically let these people solve their own problems. Let the Shiites and the Sunnis solve their own problems. Let Iraq get into it. In terms of and the Saudis and Turkey and the Egyptians.
Let's go to Senator Sununu with that. John Sununu, how about it? The Democrats, you heard Jim Webb last night saying, let's go to regional diplomacy here.
Well, I think that's a good suggestion, and that's an important part of the process. Bring in Iraq's neighbors, give them an opportunity to play a constructive role in the process, but that's not the single answer, and neither is a precipitous withdrawal of troops where we throw our hands up and say, let Iran expand its influence in the region, let there be chaos. A failed state is absolutely going to create a haven for terrorists, for movement of people, money, ammunition, that ultimately will be used to hurt our national security interests. So I don't think that's an option. But the caller makes a good point, one that I've just made, which is that there are steps the Iraqi government has to take, not should take or can't take, but they have to take if there's going to be an improvement in or sustainable improvement in security. And that's the reconciliation process that has to take place. They've got to pass an oil law that shares oil revenues with the Sunnis. If you're a Sunni, you feel economically disenfranchised because there's no guarantee that you will ever see a dollar from the oil wealth that is pumped from the country. That's critical. You've got to enfranchise them politically. By committing to holding local elections so they feel they're part of the process. And what we can do, and I think what the president is attempting to do, is to ensure that there's a window of improved security over the next 2 to 3 months where the Iraqi government can do these things.
Republican Senator John Sununu of New Hampshire. Senator Sununu, thank you very much for being with us.
Nice being with you.
Let me take a call from Somerville, Massachusetts. David's on the line. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Last night, George Bush said that whatever we voted for, it wasn't for failure, and everyone in the country thought at the same moment, yeah, but that's what we got, you know? I think people are going to look back on the speech and realize that this is the speech in which Bush essentially punted his administration. He's accepted the Democratic agenda on almost every point. But then he gave a very cynical speech where he sort of acknowledged the importance of every Democratic Party priority and then proposed some half-baked measure that was actually going to thwart and slow down the progress that were needed on each of those points, and then signaling to his hardcore that he didn't really mean it.
Do you think Democrats will take the lead and just pull away from this
absolutely.
President?
They've got the ball now, and I think they're moving very responsibly. Senator Webb's address was fantastic. He nailed it on the line without being bellicose. He sounded responsible. It had this historical resonance that the Democrats have not, been able to seize for a long time. The most important thing left for Bush to do in the next 2 years is to embrace the failure at a very fundamental level.
Embrace the failure, or at least talk about it, though there was an acknowledgement. He used the word last night. David, thanks for calling. Let me get one more here from Carl in Norwood, New York. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
What I noted in the speech was what gave the lie to much of what he did say. The short story, sir, is charity begins at home. Bush continues to beat the drum for all that is decent, good, patriotic, generous about America, and he pushed those soundbite buttons, but he avoided the mention of the total failure of all government surrounding Katrina and its continuing aftermath.
Yeah, interestingly, Jim Webb spoke to that in some of the first words of his speech. The president did not go there. Bill McKenzie, how about it? Speak to us about the president's, I don't know, state of mind, if you can judge it. You've watched him for a long time. You wrote recently about four great personal crises he's gone through in his life. His sister's death when he was a young boy. His battle with alcoholism as he approached 40, 9/11. And now you put Iraq on that platter. Do you see, a chastened man here? A defeated man? A defiant man?
I don't see a defiant man. I said earlier, he is up against it. I don't argue against that. But this guy is a fighter. And I've hearing all these callers and these comments of, you know, how irrelevant he is and, you know, that he's going to have to follow the Democrats. Well, you know, this guy has 2 years left in his presidency. Mm-hmm. I don't think he just folds tent. I know him well enough to he will gut it out and grind it out. To some extent, I wish this was the conversation we had been having over the last 2 or 3 years on some of these issues that we're talking about domestically, mm-hmm. because I think it's much closer to what he ran on in 2000. I think it's much closer to who he is, certainly was as governor. But no, I don't. He's a gutsy guy, and I don't think he's walking away.
Ryan, Lizza, what was your read on the dynamics there last night? You saw Nancy Pelosi through the whole speech, right over his shoulder, right next to Vice President Dick Cheney. That was a riveting kind of byplay in itself. You saw the up and down, standing and not standing, applauding and not applauding of this Democratic Congress now. How do you read the dynamic and what it means for the agenda the president laid out for a broader agenda?
Look, I think that basically, I'll end with what I said at the beginning. I think the Democrats are basically in a position where they're going to ignore most of the domestic priorities that the president put out. On Iraq, though, I believe that the Congress is basically rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, the president has ignored world opinion. He ignored the judgment of the 2006 electorate. He ignored the Iraq study group, and he's ignored a lot of members of his own party on what to do in Iraq. And it's almost comical to watch Republicans and Democrats have this very sort of patient debate about whether to have a resolution opposing the surge or what plan to pursue. In the meantime, the commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief, and he's going ahead with his plan. So the idea that if there's some non-binding resolution in Congress on Iraq that Bush is suddenly going to change his mind, it seems like folly to me. Like Bill said, he hinted at he's a stubborn guy, and he's going to do what he said. So on Iraq, I think that as much debate as you see in Congress, it's likely to have almost no impact.
But when you say the Democrats will ignore his priorities at home,
right,
domestically, for 2 years, they'll ignore health care, energy, immigration,
I don't
education?
Think they'll ignore. I think they'll take the lead. In other words, I don't – already they're sort of scoffed at the health care proposal. They have their – for 2 years, they've been chomping at the bit to put forward a big health care proposal, to put forward a big, bold energy plan. So I think they politely listened to what the president had to say on these issues, and now they'll sort of, you know, put out their own proposal and start legislating. You know, remember what Webb's last line was. He said, if he does, we will join him. If he does not, we will be showing him the way. I think what Democrats are going to be doing is showing George Bush the way.
Bill McKenzie, we've got 20 seconds. Will he bring out back his Texas-style, governor-style, you know, sort
Hope
of
so.
Get in the saddle
Hope
with
so.
The Democrats, even as he deals with the disappointments in Iraq?
I'd love to see more coalitions built from the center out, and I hope we can see that. I hope the Democrats are willing to work with it, too.
Well, there the president is last night, looking a bit like a lonely man at moments there. And we heard some of that distance with Senator John Sununu on Iraq in particular. Fascinating. Bill McKenzie at the Dallas Morning News, it's always great speaking with you. Thank you for joining
Thank
us this
you,
hour.
Tom.
And Ryan Lizza at the New Republic and correspondent for GQ Magazine, joining us from Washington. Ryan, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.